Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
You're about to listen to a historical episode of Dark Poutine. After episode 149, you will find Scott is no longer with the show. In an effort to maintain continuity and offer listeners as many episodes as possible, we are leaving the episodes in which he co-hosted intact. Thank you.
Welcome to Dark Poutine. I am Mike Brown, creator and host. With me as usual is my good friend and co-host, Scott Hemingway. Say hello, Scott.
You a good audience. You ain't sassy. Hi, everybody.
They're bouncy audience.
Bouncy audience. You a good puppy.
Good listeners.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during the Dark Poutine podcast are solely those of the producer and do not necessarily represent those of Curious Cast, its affiliate Global News, nor their parent company, Chorus Entertainment.
Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish. Listener discretion is strongly advised. We're not experts on the topics we present, nor are we journalists. We're two ordinary Canadians chatting about crime and the dark side of history. Let's get to it. Put on your toque, grab yourself a double-double and an Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some Dark Poutine. You sound like a pig.
Yeah, it was a snorty chomp. Which was actually my rapper name.
So we're going to Florida.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's coming up May 1st to 3rd. Well, it's a little ways away.
Well, I mean,
we got to make it through this winter and the coronavirus before we...
Yeah, we were like hard on the coronavirus on the after show.
Yeah.
And now like people are dropping.
Yeah, well,
maybe
you know,
I was a bit off in my assessment of
could have been.
severity.
So if you want to go to CrimeCon and you still haven't gotten your tickets, it's May 1st to 3rd, 2020 in Orlando, Florida. And you can get your tickets at CrimeCon.com and use Poutine2020 for 10% off that purchase.
Poutine2020.
Helps us out a lot.
Yes.
And the Yumber Yard, we are just few members away from 7,000, which is crazy.
Holy crackers, I should join.
I know. I thought you were in there.
Oh, well, maybe.
I'm pretty sure you are.
I think I am.
And also, don't forget, we will be at Fan Expo Vancouver doing a live show at 12:45 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th. And Fan Expo runs from February 15th to the 17th.
Yeah, it's always a fun time.
Yeah, there's lots of cool cosplayers there.
Yeah.
And there's... Us. Plus, there's, you know, the usual suspects. I do believe Will Wheaton might be there. I might be wrong, but...
I'm pretty sure I saw Will Wheaton on there. I saw Will Wheaton on there.
Yeah.
Other people.
You can Google that, Fan Expo Vancouver, and you can learn more.
I remember seeing there were some people. I'm like, oh, God, I hope I get to bump into them.
There you go.
I can't remember, though. Is that? Well, I don't remember a lot of things.
Well, this is episode 109, and it is the Dark Strangler, Earl Leonard Nelson.
Oh, don't know this strangler.
I know you don't. Some people do. Lots of people do. There's been a lot of coverage of him over the years. So,
yeah. I'm often bad with the names, but become familiar with the cases because I just like, it's just nonstop true crime in my house. And so often I'll be like, oh, shit, this one.
This is a story I've wanted to tell for a long time, but I've avoided it due to the sheer scope of this monster's crimes. Mm-hmm. I kind of had the same problem with Chikatilo when we did it. It's just like I just felt like I was saying this person was murdered, that person was murdered, and spent 20 minutes on that. But at the same time, these are stories that I really feel need to be told.
Yeah. I think the biggest indicator of your writing compassion is the past and the history. You've demonstrated that it's about victims. So if there's the odd case where we can't get into detail about all 20 some odd people, I don't think anybody's going to think negatively. We wish we could tell their stories completely in depth, but it's just not feasible all the
time. Earl Leonard Nelson is one of history's probably least talked about but most prolific serial killers. And it's believed he killed at least 22 people and may have committed as many as 30 or more murders across the U.S. and into Canada in the roaring 20s. So almost 100 years ago. Yeah, and he got his eventual comeuppance here in Canada. So
good.
Yeah, Canadians caught him.
Yes,
yeah, just so you know.
That's what we do.
He's been called the Gorilla Man, the Gorilla Strangler, the Dark Strangler, or just simply the Strangler.
Okay, all variations of strangling.
And like we mentioned already, we won't be able to talk about every victim as in-depth as we typically did. Otherwise, we would have a 22-episode podcast.
Or 22-hour-long episode.
Yeah, it would be very long. As the crimes of Earl Leonard Nelson took almost 100 years ago, many of the stories about the man are hyperbole. So we'll try to stick to what have been called the established facts in this case and try not to add to the mythology.
Yeah.
I read a lot of different sources, and the timelines are all over the place. Some people have him doing certain things on certain dates that other sites do not. So,
well, that's the challenge with these historical cases, is that it's very difficult. You know, the documentation is not
right
as it is nowadays.
So books like Harold Schechter's Bestial is probably the best one. There's also Michael Newton's Dark Strangler, as well as news articles, obviously, from the time. And a telling of Nelson's arrest and trial on the Winnipeg Police Service's website. And that gave me what I needed to tell this story.
Oh, good.
Yeah. We'll expand on his later crimes and his end here in Canada. But first, we have to get a bit of Earl Leonard Nelson's formative history and early murders out of the way.
Yeah, let's do that.
Earl Leonard Nelson did not get the most auspicious start to life. He was born in San Francisco on May 12th, 1897. I think that's the same year as my grandfather. His teenage mother, Frances, died of syphilis when Earl was only 9 months old.
I don't think I know anybody who's died from syphilis.
Well, it's not typical anymore. Not in
modern
first world countries, anyway. Earl's father, James, followed Francis to the grave from the same infection just 6 months later. So he was only 15 months old and he'd lost both his parents.
Oh, jeez.
It is believed that the disease was passed on to Earl in utero as his mother was infected prior to his birth.
Damn.
Over the years, some authors have pointed to Nelson's congenital syphilis as a possible cause for his increasingly erratic and violent behavior from the time he was a child. Writing about Nelson and syphilis in his book, The Dark Strangler, Michael Newton stated that the symptoms may include issues with, quote, inhibitions or asocial behavior, impairment of judgment, concentration, and short-term memory, euphoria, mania, depression, or apathy.
That's quite the list.
It sounds like you.
I think we've established that I've got the killer virus.
There you go. I have a book on hypochondriacs that I think we might go over on an after show.
Oh, fuck. That I'm just going to I'll leave the after show with, like, I'm clearly dying.
Yeah.
Of many, many things.
So young Earl Leonard Nelson went to live with his maternal grandmother. He needed somebody to take care of him.
Yeah,
for sure. Her name was Jenny, and she ran a strict and devoutly religious home. Jenny was still raising two of her own preteen children when the infant Earl came into her care. Earl was always a handful, going from a seemingly endless manic energy one moment and in the next, descending into deep depression and hiding out by himself for days at a time, staring blankly out a window.
Well, he has been through a hell of a lot in his short time to this point.
Exactly. Harold Schechter wrote in his book Bestial that Earl was not considered, quote, presentable by his grandmother, despite her best efforts. And he was such a pig when he ate, his extended family called him the Wild Man of Borneo.
Jeez. Well, that's not going to help this guy's a little...
The Wild Man of Borneo was a, quote, circus freak back in the day.
I figured it was.
That they used to wheel out. And, yeah.
So. Yeah, but, you know, clearly they don't think very fondly of him.
Of little Earl.
Yeah. And, it's going to only complicate whatever issues he's got going on in his noggin.
He was forced to go to the Pentecostal church with his grandmother. He was expected to read the Bible every day and memorize passages therein. And his grandmother warned him of the hellfire that awaited him for being a bad boy.
Oh, Jesus. So in his mind, he's already doomed.
Sure.
She's telling him, you're going to hell.
She would rant about biblical passages and had a special affinity for, of course, the hallucinatory symbols in the books of Revelations.
Mm, fantastic.
Yeah. He wasn't remotely well-behaved. He fought with other children, boys and girls. He was a well-known thief, stealing from local businesses. He would punch, kick, bite, all those kind of things. So he was expelled from one school at 7 years old and was considered a neighborhood terror.
Jesus, by 7 years old.
You're expelled from your local school, you have to go to another one.
This is not a good start.
Not a good start. In Bestial, Harold Schechter remembers the devastating 1906 San Francisco earthquake that measured 8.25 on the Richter scale.
Holy shit.
As proof of the Lord's rage against the heathens in the godless city.
Holy crackers.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So adding actual injury to what else was going on with this young man, a head injury when Earl was 10 years old may have also contributed to his violent behavior.
Hmm.
From Schechter's Bestial, quote, while trying to impress some older boys with his daring, Earl raced across the tracks of an oncoming trolley on a beat-up two-wheeler he had inherited from his Uncle Willis.
Okay.
The trolley caught the rear wheel of the bike, and Earl sent flying, landed headfirst on the cobblestones. He was carried back home unconscious. His grandmother nearly collapsed when she saw the ghastly wound on his right temple. For nearly a week, the boy slipped in and out of consciousness, raving wildly when he was awake. End quote. So he nearly died of a head injury when he was a kid.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. And so I love that the treatment is, well, we'll carry you home.
Yeah.
And the grandma's just going to be like, well, you just put him down.
He looks terrible. Just lay him in bed.
Yeah, lay him down. He'll, you know, a week of, like, lucidity.
Mm-hmm.
Barely.
Head injuries are often a thing in serial killers.
Yeah,
we've talked about that before.
Yeah, violent people in general, this topic comes up a lot with Aaron Hernandez and stuff, so yeah.
Well, I think it lowers your inhibitions and those kind of things.
It can.
It can definitely do that. Schechter goes on to say that after the sixth day, Earl claimed to be just fine, and it took 10 days more of bed rest to set him on his feet again. So he was like out to lunch for 16 days.
Jesus.
After that came memory lapses and frequent headaches that would plague him for the rest of his life.
Undoubtedly.
Okay.
The man had a concussion.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah, treatment for something like that nowadays would look far different than just go lie down for 16 days.
There was one point where he was in a hospital later on, a mental hospital. And he is having a conversation with the doctor about things that have affected him in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he points to his head and there's like a dent in his head that he gets the doctor to touch where he had acquired one of his many head injuries.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Earl Nelson then went to live with his Aunt Lillian and would bounce between her and an uncle's home until he was around 17. They found him easier to manage than his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped out of school at 14 and started working jobs requiring more physical than mental effort. He wasn't a good employee, though, and was fired often. More than once, he'd be seen standing, mouth agape, staring at nothing, away with the fairies, as one of my favorite Scottish sayings go. Strangely, even when not working, Earl always seemed to have money.
Well, that's...
Where was he getting money?
We
mentioned earlier he was a thief, so...
Shh, spoiler.
Oh, yeah. Well.
He, it's at the age of 14 and you're unemployed, you should not have money.
Right.
You should not have money. And maybe, I mean, maybe he's crocheting and selling his work. Could have
been. He's doing Baby Yoda mittens.
Yeah, yeah.
Selling them on Etsy.
They were huge back then.
Apparently Etsy's taken them all down, though. So.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Copyright?
Yep.
Yeah.
Earl was barely 18 years old when he was convicted of burglarizing a local cabin. He'd broken in, grabbed what he wanted, and was seen leaving by the returning owner, stolen property in hand. Nelson fled, but was caught 2 days later by a search party in the woods. He was sentenced to 2 years behind bars in the storied San Quentin prison. So you're 18 years old and you're off to San Quentin for
San
2 years.
That's no walk in the park.
No.
San Quentin. That's no. That's like serious business prison.
That's put on your big person pants and go to jail.
Yeah, that's if you tell people around the world, yeah, I was in San Quentin, they know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Earl had grown into a powerful-looking man. Hard time had helped him bulk up. He was not tall, but his massive hands made him look freakish and gave him the nickname Gorilla. Mm. As the First World War was coming to an end, Nelson joined the military for a brief time, but headaches and bizarre behavior landed him in the hospital and kept him out of combat.
Wow. So, instantly I'm going to define this bizarre behavior.
Well.
Flinging feces at other people.
Just a lot of, weird
erratic
stuff. Erratic. He would rant about religiosity and biblical things quite often.
Yeah.
You know, his staring at stuff and just being lost and not knowing what was going on.
Yeah,
he was sent to the Napa State Hospital for the insane, but Earl escaped so many times, they just eventually released him to be rid of him.
Hmm.
The escapes garnered him another nickname, Houdini. He'd even escaped from handcuffs a number of times.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting.
So, am I understanding, because he was breaking out so much, they just let him out?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
What an interesting approach.
Well, he was in the hospital at the time, and he wasn't considered a criminal, but he had gone AWOL from the army and all that kind of stuff. But
I'm going to start that kind of approach to a lot of things in life.
Just go bananas. And
yeah, well, just like
run away so many times, I just say, yeah, I guess you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm going to see how that works out.
Yeah, let me know.
Probably not.
Earl raved about God, or his twisted conceptions at least. He was quoting his favorite biblical passages to anyone who'd listen, but he seemed to have a lot of problems practicing what he was preaching. He was violent and stealing and all those kind of things. But one of the people who was listening was a 60-year-old woman named Mary Martin, a friend of his grandmother's.
Okay, well.
In 1919... When he was just 22, Nelson and Mary got married.
Hmm. Bit of a age gap there.
Little bit of what do they call it? May, September, or something like that?
No, I don't know the expression.
April, September, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 1919 was a very different time, Mike. Maybe this was...
not really. That was considered odd then, too.
So that's remained consistent through times.
With Mary, at first... Earl was a little weird, but she wasn't afraid of him. That came later when he continued to have violent outbursts. Within a year, she was terrified of him, but loved him anyway.
As you would.
I guess.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Earl had received another head injury.
Jesus.
While working as a tree trimmer, he fell out of a tree, through the branches, landing hard, head first, on his pumpkin. His headaches got worse, and so did his behavior.
I would imagine that would, yeah.
It's
not going to improve things. It's not the Fonz where you hit your own head and everything works.
No, you just tip out of a tree and
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Yeah. He certainly isn't the most coordinated person, I'm suspecting.
No. After a final fight with Mary in 1921, she wanted him out for the time being. Nelson jumped through the window of their home, cursing her as he went.
Well, I mean, that's one way to do it.
Right?
I mean,
if you're going to leave, you just defenestrate yourself. I can't believe I got to use the word defenestrate.
Wow, I don't even know what that means.
It means to exit through a window or to be thrown out of a window or to violently go out of a window. Defenestration.
Your whole life has led to this moment.
Right.
Where you could say that word.
I love the word defenestrate.
Yeah. And, I mean, for all we know, like in the early 1900s, I don't know if doors were invented yet.
There were doors.
Everybody, there was like the Dukes of Hazzards of houses. You would get in and out of your house. You just jump through the windows.
I've seen pictures of my grandmother's house in the 1920s.
Yeah.
Doors.
Maybe she pioneered that. Maybe they were the first doors to have housed back then.
Nova Scotian woman invents doors.
This is what I'm saying.
Mm.
Well, doors existed. They just weren't attached to houses yet.
Yeah, something tells me that's not the case.
I think which one of us is the historian?
Neither of us.
Let's not get bogged down in semantics.
So soon after leaving Mary on May 19th, 1921, Earl, claiming to be a plumber sent to fix a gas leak, talked his way into the home of Charles Summers. Nelson then found 12-year-old Mary Summers playing in the basement where he sexually assaulted her.
Oh, fuck.
He was trying to strangle the girl when her brother came running, responding to the screams and commotion he'd heard downstairs.
Good brother.
Nelson dropped the girl, punched her brother and knocked him down, and took off into the neighborhood. He was captured 2 hours later riding a trolley, fighting the whole way to the police cells.
Yeah, I went from, like, you know, giggling and laughing and being jovial about this to pretty quickly, now I just want to break his neck.
He goes from, I'm just a thief and maybe just a bit goofy and clumsy, but now he's super violent.
Yeah, now I want to break his neck.
Well, if you see pictures of his hands and the way he looked, it looks like he would just snap you in two.
Well, you don't need big hands to be able to do that to me.
Yeah.
But, okay, well, I'll scratch him up is what I'm getting at.
Earl was put into a straitjacket and tied to the bed after exhibiting extremely bizarre behavior in his cell. From a crimelibrary.com article written by Mark Gribben, quote, on his first evening in jail, he plucked his eyebrows completely with just his fingernails and began howling about seeing faces on the wall.
Holy Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect he didn't have peyote in there.
No. Mary, who continued to support Nelson, agreed to his involuntary hospitalization back at the Napa Hospital. Mm. So, from Harold Schechter's Bestial, paperwork spoke of some of the symptoms of Nelson's insanity. Quote, brought to DH, or Detention Hospital, order Judge Superior Court, Department 11, charged with attacking girl. At DH, patient apathetic. Mm. Difficult to elicit information, hears voices and spirits and sees them, threaten suicide. People about him say he is crazy, will not associate with him, claims to have lapses of memory, end quote.
Hmm.
This guy sounds as though he was suffering.
For sure. I mean, a lot of early trauma, a lot of head trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's not to say and not to pass off that's why he is the way he is, but there's no doubt that that kind of brain trauma and life trauma is
definitely
going to have an impact.
Yeah, it's going to muck with you a bit.
Oh, it, clearly, especially the head trauma, because that's not...
That's physical.
That's not something you can improve upon with behavioral techniques and whatnot. It's you got the trauma heads.
Yeah. According to Bestial, during treatment, Earl admitted to doctors that he'd masturbated several times a day since he was 14 years old, and since married, had frequent intercourse with his elderly wife on top of the masturbating.
Okay.
He also admitted to regular binges on alcohol. He was diagnosed constitutional psychopath with outbreaks of psychosis just days after being admitted to the hospital.
I mean, sounds right.
Sure.
I don't know what constitutional psychopath means, but...
Like...
The core of you is spoiled.
Pretty much. Earl spent more than 2 years in hospital and had tried to escape early on, but seemed to be conforming during his second year.
Well.
He began to decompensate slowly and became restless.
Hmm.
Earl escaped the hospital on October 5th, 1923. He was picked up in San Francisco and taken back to Napa, where he spent another 16 months on the wards. On March 10th, 1925, he was released as, quote, improved.
Not better.
Improved.
Improved.
Improved enough to be out and about.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
So he spent a couple of years institutionalized.
As so much time had passed since Earl Leonard Nelson's assault on Mary Summers, and as he has spent all that time involuntarily in the hospital, the charges against him for the crime were dropped.
Okay, not jazzed about that.
But at the same time, I think that would probably happen today as well.
I think if you were found not criminally responsible because you diagnosed clinically insane, I don't think they, because you were in the hospital beforehand, they go, you know what? That was good enough.
Yeah, well, that's what they did then.
Yeah, well, different times.
Yeah, and it's weird that becomes the excuse for these episodes that happened a long time ago.
Yeah, that it's, well, different times.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not a way of saying like, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. That's how things, but it's to explain that, yeah, shit was way different.
It was a lot different. The next year of Earl Leonard Nelson's life, due to a lack of remarkable events, is not well documented. Obviously, if nothing's happening, yeah, there's not going to be a lot.
There aren't police records
exactly
indicating that he did good this year.
Yeah.
Well behaved.
He bounced around between his Aunt Lillian's and that of his wife, Mary, who reluctantly took him back briefly. Mary gave him clean clothes and made sure he looked well-groomed. She took care of him the best she could, but his religious ranting and dangerous outbursts continued. He would disappear for months at a time, and no one was sure where he was living. Eventually, Mary had enough, and Nelson moved on.
Good for you, Mary.
Well, she's always kind of held a candle for him, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but...
You'll see later on.
Oh, boy.
She carries on.
Pining.
Well, yeah. She felt that she really loved him, so...
And probably had a huge component of, I can help him.
Yeah. Some believe that while he was missing for those months, he may have murdered and raped the corpses of at least 6 women. 3 in California, 3 in Philadelphia between August and November of 1925. Yes, that's right. I said necrophilia.
Jesus.
These crimes remain unsolved, but did have many similarities to Nelson's later crimes. Mm. They're not included in his official death count for lack of evidence.
Yeah, when we hear these very old cases, I often immediately think like, oh, I wonder if that was happening now with the forensics we have.
Yeah.
We'd probably be able to definitively.
And that's the feeling that I got as I read this. I don't think that this guy would have gotten away with things for as long as
yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. In February of 1926, Nelson's serial murder spree began. In less than 2 years, a trail of bodies murdered at his hands would lie across 9 states and 1 Canadian province. Hmm. And we will take a break right here.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. So what are your thoughts so far?
There's a lot to unpack so far that...
Yeah. And there's more coming.
I'm concerned about the life he led as a child. Mm-hmm. A lot of terrible traumas. Any one of those could significantly impact how somebody copes
yep.
with life moving forward.
What I feel badly for is all the people around him who were trying to take care of him. And, you know, even... at school and those kind of things, it's like, can you imagine being a teacher and having somebody who is just unmanageable in your classroom?
Well, yeah, but it doesn't sound like anybody in the immediate proximity of him, i.e. his grandma, and at that point in time, doesn't sound like they were helping
yeah.
in any capacity with the traumas. I didn't.
They were
trying
to give him a good education and a strict upbringing and those kind of things.
In 1908 or whenever the hell, 1912, there wasn't a lot of... Okay, so tell me, how do you feel about what happened to your parents? Does that linger?
Hellfire and brimstone.
Yeah, that was you. Well, God did that because you bad.
Yep, pretty much.
You know, and so for like
that
so
still happens in places.
Yeah, tragically,
there are still people who are sent for conversion therapy.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Yeah. But anyway, we won't get into that. In a residential neighborhood on Pierce Street in San Francisco on February 20th, 1926, Earl Leonard Nelson first employed the ruse that would allow him access to the majority of his victims.
Oh, no.
In a clean suit, with his hair washed and coiffed, and a Bible tucked under his arm, Nelson knocked on the door of an apartment house with a room to let sign in the window.
Mm.
The house belonged to 60-year-old spinster, that's in quotes, because that's not a word that I would use, Clara B. Newman, who lived on the first floor apartment. Her nephew, on the second floor, and a third floor apartment was home to a family named Brown, no relation. A tiny, empty attic apartment was above that, and that was the one that was for rent.
Hmm.
Nelson told Clara He was a Bible student and was looking for a place to lay his head while he studied.
That sounds nice.
Clara let him in and showed him the attic apartment. Clara's nephew, Merton, heard muffled voices below as his aunt answered the door and let her prospective tenant in. Around 30 minutes later, Merton, who had now been in the basement looking at the furnace down a back staircase, encountered a powerfully built and stocky man quickly making his way out of Clara's back door.
Boy.
The two interacted briefly before the man left, so he got a good description of
him. Mm-hmm.
From Harold Schechter's Bestial, quote, "Can I be of assistance?" Merton asked. "Tell the landlady I will return in an hour," the stranger replied. "I would like to rent that empty apartment." With that, he pulled open the door and strode away, end quote.
So playing things casual.
Completely.
Yeah.
And very, you know, presentable.
Yeah, and calm.
Businesslike.
Yeah.
A few hours later, having some business questions for his aunt, Merton sought Clara out. He found her laying in the kitchen of the attic apartment she'd presumably shown to the man who killed her. Clara lay on the floor on her side. Dress had been pulled up over her waist, exposing her lower body.
Oh boy.
The autopsy on Clara's body revealed she had been strangled manually by someone with massive, powerful hands. It also pointed to necrophilia.
Jeez.
It appeared that whoever had killed her had sexually assaulted her after death.
So uncomfortable. Not having sex with dead people, I mean, like, just hearing that, like, I feel very uncomfortable.
And I don't understand it. I can't fathom wanting to hurt somebody to the point where they're dead, actually carrying
yeah.
that out.
Yeah.
And then defiling them afterward.
Well, I assume that, a lot of sexual crimes and violent crimes, it's about control. It's
yeah.
about humiliation.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think he's just following suit.
On March 2nd, 1926, in Santa Barbara, another body belonging to a woman, this time her name was Mrs. Laura Beale, and she was 63, was found. She had been showing another room to let at her house at 521 East Santa Clara Street. Laura's husband, Harvey, found her on a mattress in the bedroom of the empty apartment.
Jesus.
From Harold Schechter's Bestial, quote, "From the condition of the room and dreadful bruises on her face, he could see that there had been a violent struggle. She had been strangled with the silken cord of her dressing gown, which had been twisted so savagely around her neck that it was embedded in her flesh. Her garments were hiked to her waist," end quote.
Oh my, this guy is disgusting.
Oh, it's repellent.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get any better.
It's so much.
And again, as with Clara Newman, Mrs. Beale had been raped post-mortem.
Ugh. Ugh.
In San Francisco, on June 10th, 1926, Lillian St. Mary, who also had a room for rent sign in her window, was found manually strangled and displayed in much the same way as the other victims on the bed in her spare room that she had meant to let. She had been raped after death. Police were becoming frustrated, the public was afraid, and according to Schechter's book Bestial, it was now that the paper began calling the mystery murderer the Dark Strangler.
Yeah, his M.O. was quite specific and consistent.
Yeah. On June 24th, 1926, so we're looking at 14 days later, just 2 weeks,
shit.
Ollie Russell, 53, was found in her Santa Barbara home. She had been strangled and raped after death.
Here we go again, fourth time.
In Oakland, California, on August 16th, 1926, Mary C. Nesbitt, 52, was found strangled and raped in her apartment building. Her husband, suspected at first, was questioned and cleared.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he was cleared.
Can you imagine you discover your wife dead, strangled, raped, all of the above, and you are the one who is questioned harshly?
Yeah, I was...
And in those days, it wasn't... The questioning wasn't exactly like, come on in, we'll have a little conversation.
Oh, and the rules of interrogation are vastly... I'm pretty confident there were punches thrown.
Phone it, like, books.
Yeah, yeah.
Rubber hoses and stuff.
I can't imagine. I was just listening to to another podcast. I don't remember which, but it was talking about a mom who was convicted for killing her kid and then was found to be innocent. And it's just like how traumatic is it enough
yeah.
to have to
deal with a dead relative.
With the loss of yeah. your child
yeah.
And then to be wrongfully incarcerated, like, oh.
Just terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Most likely due to the heat of the investigation in California, Nelson moved north to Portland, Oregon for his next murders. Making up for lost time, Nelson killed three more women in just 3 days.
Wow.
On October 19, 1926, Mrs. Beta B. Derkoop Withers was found stuffed into a trunk by her 15-year-old son. She had been strangled and raped after death. I have to say this every single time, just so you know.
Well, it's an important fact. I mean,
it's his signature.
Yeah, exactly.
That's his signature. 59-year-old Virginia Ada Gray Grant's strangled and defiled body was found behind the furnace in the basement of her boarding house the next day, October 20th, 1926. And the day after that, October 21st, 1926, Mabel H. Fluke was found having been strangled and raped after death in the attic of her boarding house.
Jesus Christ. And on that note, Mabel is a greatly underused name nowadays.
Actually, those older names are starting to make a comeback.
Oh, really?
They are, yeah. Eugenia and things like that are starting to make a comeback. It's interesting to see.
Yeah.
I have yet to meet a little boy named Ebenezer, though. I think that's a fantastic
name. It really is.
He went quiet again for another few weeks. On November 18th, 1926, Nelson was back in San Francisco, where he strangled Anna Edmonds, 56, with a rag and then raped her corpse. On November 19th, the next day, in Burlingame, California, a 28-year-old pregnant woman with the last name Murray was attacked by Nelson as she showed him the home that she had for sale. Luckily, even though she was with child, she was no frail elderly woman and was able to fight him off and survive the attack.
Good.
But again, another good description of this guy that the paper is disseminating. 4 days later, north in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood.
Oh, I like that place.
Nelson strangled and then raped Florence Monk, 48, leaving her behind the furnace in the basement of her home after stealing jewelry he would later gift to women in Portland.
Ugh.
Burglary also was a thing.
Yeah, but
so he would kill and rape and burgle.
It doesn't sound necessarily for profit, though. It's more for souvenir.
Maybe to watch the look on somebody's face as he gives away a murder victim's stuff.
Yeah.
On November 29th, 1926, after the discovery of 48-year-old Blanche Myers' strangled and raped body in her Portland, Oregon home, investigators were able to collect fingerprints that would later place Nelson at that crime scene.
Mm, good.
Women on the West Coast were warned not to show houses or rooms to rent to potential renters alone.
Good advice.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It took that long before that happened, though.
Yeah, shit.
Isn't that crazy?
But again, we're so used to current technology and forensic tools. We have online databases now where, fingerprints or shit. It's like, back then.
Yeah.
It was much harder to sit there and go, I wonder if there were similar cases in other areas.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to
get
together. It's like we saw that even as late as Clifford Olson.
Yeah.
They had to get into a room together to figure out who was doing what.
Yeah.
But
because
this case was so well known through the media, people were on the lookout for this, and they began to make these connections kind of earlier, but they couldn't catch the guy because he moved around so much. Out of fear of capture, hitchhiking and hopping on freight trains, Nelson headed east. He stopped in Council Bluffs, Iowa, where he strangled and raped Mrs. John Berard, 41, in her home on December 2nd of 1926.
Oh my God, this guy.
In Kansas City, Missouri, on December 27th, Nelson strangled and raped 23-year-old Bonnie Pace. The next day, also in Kansas City, in one of his more horrific outings, Earl strangled and raped Jermaine Harpin, 28 years old, and then he strangled her crying 8-month-old son, Robert Harpin, to death with his own diaper.
Fuck. Holy shit. And there's just no cool down with this guy. Typically, serial killers.
Weeks, but that's barely. He'll go on a binge while he's doing it.
Yeah,
so.
and weeks is barely anything in the world of a serial. I mean, typically you'll have somebody pace it with a couple of months in between each occurrence, but he's just like, give it a couple weeks, then go on a blitz.
Well, interestingly, after killing a baby, probably horrified by his last crime, he went quiet again for a number of months.
Good.
Not committing any murders that we actually know about.
Yeah, yeah.
So he made his way further east, stopping first in the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Brotherly Love was truly the furthest thing from his mind.
Yeah, I think love, period.
Yeah.
Was.
There on April 27th, 1927, Nelson murdered and raped a 53-year-old landlady named Mary McConnell, taking some of her jewelry with him. Mm-hmm. And he tried to pawn the stolen items the next day in town, but was turned down.
Oh, okay.
But again, someone saw him with property mm-hmm. that belonged mm-hmm. to one of his victims. I can't imagine the police are like, what the heck is going on? This guy is just all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And by this time, the description of him was in, like, post offices and tacked bulletin boards and police stations mm-hmm. across the country. He'd been seen on so many occasions, authorities had a pretty decent idea what he looked like, at
yeah.
least.
Yeah.
But they still didn't know who he was. On wow. May 30th, 1927, in Buffalo, New York, 53-year-old Jenny Randolph's body was found underneath the bed in her home. She suffered the same fate as the rest of Nelson's victims.
Which we all know what that is.
Yeah. Ugh. Moving quickly to throw cops off his trail, Nelson killed two women in the Detroit, Michigan boarding house on the same day, on June 1st, 1927. He defiled their bodies after death, as he typically did.
Yep.
He killed the landlady, Fannie Mae, 53, with a length of electrical cord, and then one of her tenants, Mrs. Maureen Atorthy.
I've lost count.
Yeah, exactly.
This is insane.
It's nuts. This is why I have problems with these cases.
Yeah.
Because this is what happens.
Yeah.
And Carol mentioned it to me earlier. She listens to a podcast about neurology because that's kind of her pet thing.
Yeah.
And how a human can only have so much empathy for a certain amount of people. And after a while, you just numb
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that in our podcast and just become numb to all these things.
Yeah.
I want each one to have an impact.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of didn't pull punches in talking about what happened to these people.
Yeah, good. Makes sense.
Nelson's last murder in the U.S. occurred on June 4th, 1927 in Chicago, Illinois. Mary Cecilia Sietsma was found strangled with a cord from one of her household appliances, and she had been raped post-mortem.
Of course.
Feeling the police close behind him, the killer crossed the border into Canada, making his way to Winnipeg.
Hmm.
It's unclear whether Earl Leonard Nelson was aware that the U.S. didn't have an extradition agreement with Canada at the time, but I don't think he was that intelligent.
No, I get that. It was my instant thought process was just coincidence. He wasn't aware.
On June 9th, 1927, 14-year-old Lola Cowan left home to sell artificial flowers in the afternoon. She was not seen alive again. From an article in the Winnipeg Evening Tribune, only days after her death, accompanied by a picture of the innocent victim of the gorilla strangler, quote, she was found by a roomer in Mrs. John W. Hill's rooming house at 133 Smith Street, Sunday afternoon, dead and naked under the bed. Black bruises on her young throat told where the strangler's large hands had choked her to death. She had been assaulted, the coroner's examination showed. So that's their nice way of saying what had happened mm-hmm. to her. It also showed the girl had been dead since Thursday night. So she was found days after. Not an article of the child's clothing was found in the room. The strangler had taken all of it after he had shoved the girl's naked body where it was found, far under the single bed, huddled face to the wall, end quote.
I find the fact that he constantly is hiding the bodies interesting, even though I don't think he really needs to because they're in rooms and homes.
But maybe he's realizing what a monster he is. You know, so because he starts hiding bodies later on in his killing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before it was just like display them. As he went, he would sort of tuck them away.
Yeah, I can maybe hiding them from his guilty conscience.
Or it could have been just like, this gives him time to get away. It could have been that simple.
My instincts tell me that he's just trying to prevent them from being found quickly to give him more time to escape. But then it's like, yeah, but I mean,
yeah,
it's not like you're burying them or putting a lot of effort into hiding them. No. So I'll put them under the bed.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not the best hiding job.
No. Mrs. Emily Patterson was to be Earl Leonard Nelson's last known murder victim. She and her family had moved to their apartment at 100 Riverton in Winnipeg only 2 weeks prior, immigrants from Ireland.
Shit.
Emily had not been at her home when her husband returned that evening. He couldn't find her. It was not until he was putting their sons to bed that he discovered his wife's body.
Oh, jeez.
She'd been bludgeoned with a claw hammer and raped after death. All their money, around $60, had been stolen as well. He had crammed her under her own son's bed.
Oh, my God.
There were other indicators present leading police to believe that the dark strangler, so sought after in the U.S., had made his way to Canada.
Yeah. Well, again, his signature, his M.O. is so specific and telling.
Yep. The Canadian newspapers began publishing stories containing the suspect's description and a reward for his capture. It was like $1,500. Well, a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
According to Schechter's Bestial, the Manitoba Free Press bold headline on the front page read, quote, "Killer is still at large. Identify strangler as much wanted gorilla man. American police join in the hunt for elusive slayer," end quote.
It's pretty salacious.
Yeah, right? And most news was in those days.
Yeah, oh yeah. And we talk about that in the social media world where people will always like, it's a gotcha headline.
Yeah.
Or, but yeah, it's not new.
It's 1920s clickbait.
Exactly the word I was looking for. Exactly. So yeah, it's nothing new.
Nelson ran to Regina, Saskatchewan, being spotted many times on the way and standing out like a sore thumb as a disheveled stranger. From Mark Gribben's CrimeLibrary.com article, quote, "Earl Nelson was 5 miles from the U.S. border when the first lawman caught up with him. His description had spread throughout the province and every border town was on alert. When Nelson stopped in a general store in Wacopa, Manitoba to buy food, he was recognized by the store owner and a patron who knew of the $1,500 reward and notified the law.
Yeah.
Nelson was headed out of town along the southbound railroad tracks, aware that he had been spotted. He'd gotten about a mile and a half away from Wacopa when the local constable appeared in front of him, revolver drawn.
Yes.
Earl Nelson immediately raised his hands and surrendered.
Go, Canada!
End quote. The RCMP always get their man, right?
Clearly.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well, guess what?
Oh, shit.
He was calling himself Virgil Wilson and claimed he did not know anything about the Dark Strangler. When the man was left alone briefly at the Killarney jail, he managed to pick the lock of his cell with a piece of wire and took off into the darkness, hiding out in a nearby barn.
I got the mads.
He got away. However, he was caught quickly by a search party and taken into custody for the last time. It took some time to determine whether they actually had captured the gorilla strangler, because he kept denying.
Yeah, yeah.
From Mark Gribben's CrimeLibrary.com article, quote, "As the witnesses and police from various jurisdictions pooled their evidence, as we talked about, a more complete picture of his modus operandi evolved. He usually killed shortly after he had been shaved and barbered, and then let his appearance grow more shaggy until the need to murder became unbearable." From his wife, Mary, police were able to report that Earl had not been home at the time of any of the slayings. Other evidence that Nelson was the killer was the fact that a knife with a blade that appeared burned by an electric spark was found in his possession. The killer of the landlady in Detroit had used an electrical cord with a knife to commit the crime. At the time, police predicted the man would have a knife with an electrical burn.
Okay.
Interesting evidence,
very,
right?
Very, very.
Nelson, who had finally admitted his identity, continued to maintain his innocence. Murder just as impossible for a man of my high Christian ideals, Schechter records Nelson as saying to a Manitoba newspaper, end quote.
So his defense is, I couldn't do it because I love God.
Yep.
That's and I love that he escaped and quickly was caught again, because that's how good we are in Canada, it's like we give you a second here. Okay.
Yeah, see if you can get away.
We still got you.
Yeah. Of course, Nelson had been deemed a constitutional psychopath by psychiatrists, but was felt to be completely sane enough to stand trial for the murders of 14-year-old Lola Cowan and Emily Patterson, both of Winnipeg. He was also charged with a couple of counts of attempted molestation and burglary.
Okay.
The monster's trial began in Winnipeg on November 1st, 1927, and ended on November 4th, as Nelson grinned from time to time during the proceedings, seeming not to care that his life was at stake or even remotely moved by the emotional testimony of victims' families or his ex-wife, Mary Martin. The evidence making him out to be one of history's worst killers seemed to bore him.
Ooh, wow.
Yep. Well, you think about when BTK did his allocution.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He was just like, matter of fact, oh, well, yeah, this happened and that happened and I did that and, you know.
Yeah, just like he's reciting a paragraph from a book or chapters from a book.
It's like giving a recipe for fried eggs.
Yeah, yeah, it's a completely unemotional, matter of fact. It's chilling. It's really chilling watching the BTK's assertion. Dissertation, some kind of attention.
Allocution.
That's what I said.
Although Nelson's defense team tried to say it was insanity that had driven him to murder, he was found guilty and sentenced to hang.
Oh, well.
From the Winnipeg Police Services website, quote, at the end of the trial on November 4th, the jury took 48 minutes to find Earl Leonard Nelson guilty of murder and sentenced him to hang. There was no appeal. On Friday the 13th of January 1928, after walking up 13 steps to the gallows, Earl became the 13th person to hang at the Vaughan Street Jail. End quote.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't say I'm mad about that.
A lot of 13s.
And it's lot of 13s.
Right?
That is a lot of 13s. But, if there is a day that you're going to go out to be executed,
why not?
That is the day.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that is the day.
So that's it for this week's story. Holy crapola.
Yeah.
Another one of those insanely insane ones.
Yeah. These ones I wouldn't say struggle with, but I find most fascinating because, again, I start off with some empathy because you hear about this terrible upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma after trauma after trauma. And...
But a lot of people have that.
Yeah, but I just... any time I hear about a child... suffering through traumas, I want to, my instinct is to want to hug, like to
take
tell
care
you're
going to
be okay. And then when you realize, well, okay, I know what this person continues to do in life, you just like, there's such a conflict of feelings where, this poor kid, I know he's a piece of shit.
Isn't it interesting how we can forgive bad behavior of the child, but the minute that they're an adult, it's like, nope.
Well, now,
unless you're tried as an adult.
Yeah, I mean, one's brain is not fully formed and you have not yet garnered enough experience in life to know
but
what you know as an adult.
And isn't the formation of that brain part of the whole trick? Like, so you end up messed up because of you were messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But, well, that's the whole... how traumas impact people is because your way of coping with certain situations is flawed.
Now, this guy sounds like he would have never been rehabilitated at all. It sounded like
he
was so caught up in the sexual aspect of it that it was...
And the control and the power and the domination.
He was just driven. He was bloodthirsty.
Yeah, and it certainly seems like there's not even 1% of remorse.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have any issues with what he's done.
Yeah, so we go back to these cases. Like, this is why I hesitate to cover cases with many victims. It's not only horrific that so many people die, but we can't talk about them as individuals.
You can only mention and move on to the next name.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to cover more of these cases, though. I think we'll be more intermittent with them.
Yeah.
I do that we can discuss the victim a little more.
More individual related crimes. Yeah.
Yeah. These cases, though, are definitely interesting. But at the same time, I don't want to lose our compassionate approach and the spirit of what we do.
Well, in a lot of these large cases with multiple victims, they are often covered by a lot of other podcasts as well. So if we are covering one, it is kind of good to go and dig back and find something that hasn't really been talked about that often.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
tough.
Yeah. Yeah, because compassion is our...
But we're not murder porn, right? Like,
no.
There's plenty of those folks out there who'll have a beer and a laugh and all that kind of stuff while they're telling the story. And not to say that that's good or bad. It's just the way that they do it.
Yep.
But ours, I think the reason we're a little different is because we take the time.
Well, it's at the core of who we are. We genuinely give a shit about people, and the thought of us doing or saying anything... in just in life that can hurt somebody is very, very, that sticks and hurts, it sticks with us. And so, the compassion is just a part of who we are. I like to think.
I think so. So it's time to lighten things up, Scott Hemingway.
Wah, wah, wah. You a good puppy.
Yeah.
You a sassy.
You a sassy puppy. That's a funny thing.
You ain't looked me in the face. It's nasty.
Oh, man. We have a few voicemails.
Holy shit.
Obviously, we can only play a couple of them.
My God, yeah.
So let's go with one of the shorter ones here. Because, yeah, you're not getting 3 minutes on the show.
Hey, guys. This is Owen in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm a construction worker out here. Love the show. You're saying as a... reminded me of the same we have on the site for our foreman and other folk. We like to say, go fuck your hat. So maybe I should consider doing that. Also, maybe consider doing a series on the idiot methane drug war that happened here back in like 2008 and 2009. The morons in Spryfield shooting at each other. That was quite a thing. Anyways, take it easy and go fuck your hat.
I'm doing it now.
I love Nova Scotians, number one, because I'm one of them, but also because we are colorful people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. So thank you, Owen, the construction worker from Halifax. And we will go fuck our hats as well as go shitting in them.
Yeah, but I think at the same time.
No.
You don't want to mix those two things.
Yeah, you want to shit in it probably after.
Yeah.
Because.
Or well wash it before you fuck it.
There's all kinds of things that have to happen.
Clearly.
But thank you so much, Owen. You rock, and you might even roll. But thanks for giving us a call from Halifax.
Appreciate that, Owen.
Muchas gracias. Or, as we say in Nova Scotia, thank you. And here's another one. Oh, this one looks like it might be from Edmonton. So hopefully it's not somebody raving about Scott being hateful to the Oilers. Let's give this one a listen.
Hello, my name is Melissa Laviolette from Edmonton, Alberta, and I just want to say thank you very much for your weekly shows. I really appreciate them, and they make my work day a little bit sweeter. I have been reading a little bit about a girl named Anne Hamilton Breyer or Byrne. She's called the Mama. She was a cult leader. And I would really like to hear your guys's, take on or the narration of what you guys think the story would be like. Take a peek. And I look forward to the next episode of Dark Routine. Thank you very much. Bye.
Interesting.
That's an interesting case. I've never heard of that case.
Mama?
So we might give that a peek.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do like ourselves some cults.
Well, yeah.
I've just such a... I'm fascinated.
I've added six cult stories to my book.
Sweet. Wow.
I'm talking about six different cult-like things.
Wow. Yeah, they're just fascinating of how one is able to control many.
Our friend Alan Warren has just written a book about cults and sent it to the editor, so... He's got one just about to come out.
He's a good puppy.
Yeah, he's a good puppy. Alan Warren is a good egg. Although, he does get wound up about things. But anyway, good on you, Alan. So if you want to give us a call and send us a voicemail, you can do so at 1-877-327-5786 or 1-877-DARK-PTN. That's 1-877-DARK-PTN. And
we harmonized.
Yeah, we did. It's amazing.
It's beautiful.
We're like the Beatles over here.
Pretty much.
Well, I don't know about that.
I said pretty much.
Pretty much is not exactly.
It's close enough, though.
Close enough. Hey, nobody gets hurt if we just tell stories, right?
Well, I hope not.
Well, I mean, it depends on the story.
Yeah.
We don't make things up about people.
Well, I mean, unless it's Christmas. Too soon? Too soon?
No, it's not too soon. People did get wound up about that. Holy smokes.
They did.
Why did they?
I think they felt betrayed because they didn't recognize our pattern for Christmas specials. And
right.
They thought we betrayed their trust by lying to them. And it was a joke.
Right. There's a difference between a lie and a joke.
Yeah, we weren't.
It's like if you said that would be like getting angry at Saturday Night Live and saying...
Yeah, you lied to us. Well, no, because they weren't trying to tell you.
It's satire. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Satire.
Satire. That's what we were trying to do. I don't know if we were successful at it. But
I think we were very successful. So successful that some people didn't realize.
Yeah. Yeah, some people were oh, well.
Which sucks. I mean, that's not what we wanted people to feel, but...
We wanted them to feel Christmassy.
We wanted to make people laugh.
Yeah. And I think we did.
I think we did.
We made the majority of people laugh.
99.999%.
Exactly. And that's what's important.
That's a good percentage.
It is a good percentage.
I know my percentages.
You do know your percentages at times.
Yep. Usually not the right times.
Oh, no?
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's get started with some Patreon shout-outs.
I would like that.
How about Alyssa Robinson from Osgood, Ontario?
Osgood. That would also be a great name.
Osgood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Osgood. Gertrude.
Thank you, Alyssa Robinson.
Thank you so much, Alyssa.
We appreciate your support of the show. Caitlin Morgan. What's this? Another person from Harrisonburg, Virginia? So that's weird.
Well, we do a lot of marketing there.
Apparently. And Scott Arsenault from East Lansing, Michigan.
Oh, sweet.
Got
a little Michigan in the house.
Yep. Jeanette England from London, Ontario.
What?
Yeah. Wow. There's some interesting folks here.
Well, there always is.
Right? Kelly Manderville from Moncton, New Brunswick.
Yeah, Kelly.
One of my favorite little towns.
Moncton.
Moncton, we covered the Mountie murders
we
in
did.
Moncton at that time, yeah. And next up we have Lisa Miller, and I don't know where Lisa's from.
Lisa Miller is from Cape Fear.
We had someone from Cape Fear last week, didn't we?
No, we did not.
Okay. Maybe it's because I watched both the old version and the new version. And then
that might be the case.
We saw The Simpsons Cape Fear show. Do you remember that one?
So,
Sideshow Bob is under the car.
Yeah, I do. I do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that must be what you're recalling. Because no, I had not mentioned the Cape Fear yet.
So what's going on with Lisa Miller in Cape Fear? Does she hide under cars?
No, what she does is she makes fear capes.
She makes fear capes?
Yeah, yeah. So
are they very, like, she makes the cape so somebody can turn around and scare the crap out of somebody.
No,
with the cape?
But that maybe she should expand into that. But no, it's a cape that has like serial killer portraits on the cape. So it's to instill fear. It's to make you scared with fear.
I think you're ill.
Clinically, yeah, clinically ill. I got the scooters. But so yeah, she lives in Cape Fear and she makes fear capes.
Well, that's good for her.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good.
Next up, we have Rebecca Wagsback, and she's from Conroe, Texas.
Oh, sweet!
I like Texas.
Yeah,
I haven't been to Texas.
I would like to go to Texas, certain places specifically.
I like Dallas.
Yeah, that's one of the places I want to go. I really want to go to Austin.
Dallas was very, how can I put this, concrete-y. There was lots of roads.
Sense. I suspect that. Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, it was very roady.
Yeah. Well, roady.
Yeah.
Wow. So you couldn't go to and fro.
And I went to the book depository. And
I think it's law.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I went with Shay and Aaron from All Crime, No Cattle. Listen to that show. They're fantastic. But yeah, I went with them and we had a great time. And it's one of the best museums I've ever been in. And all that nonsense about Oswald not being able to make those shots, I could have made those. Just so you know, it's a very small area. It's not as big as it looks.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
Nope, not at all.
Very interesting.
Next up, we have a Marion R. Kahn from Jackson Heights, New York.
Whoa, New York in the house.
New York. Thank you, Marion.
Very much thank you.
Marion's my mom's name.
Is it?
It is.
Well, that's adorable.
A little spelled a little different than this Marion, but yeah.
Well, one of them's right.
Or both of them.
Sure, that's what I meant.
Exactly. That's what I meant. Think both of them are correct. And next up we have Jay McMillan. And I don't know where Jay is from.
Oh, pretty close locally, Steveston.
Oh, Steveston, yeah. That's a neighborhood in Richmond, British Columbia.
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely area.
Is Jay a tuna fisherman?
You're close.
Okay.
Works in a restaurant.
Oh, okay, so deals with tuna in one way or another.
There's no fish on
the... Oh, what kind of restaurant is it? Is it the Hog Shack where we went?
It's not, but that was good.
That was good food. Yeah, I had the brisket.
Yeah, you did.
Yes.
Yeah,
I had brisket tonight for dinner.
What the hell's happening? Wow.
I don't know. Carol bought some brisket.
Wow, wow. No, all they sell in this restaurant are shortbread.
What?
Yeah.
I can't see that being very popular outside of Christmas.
Oh, it's huge. Oh, it's huge. Yeah, yeah.
What's huge? The restaurant is huge? Or
The business. Oh. Like they're thinking of expanding.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, the open location.
Is it shaped shortbread or is it like, it looks like loaves of bread shortbread?
Looks like loaves of bread.
Oh, interesting. I've never seen that before.
No, well, this is why they're so popular. They're breaking new bread ground. Yeah. Yeah, so it's, go check it out in Steveston.
I'm fairly certain you've hit your head this week.
I think it's called the Breadatorium.
The Breadatorium.
The Short Breadatorium. Yeah.
In
Steveston. Delicious. Go check it out. I've never eaten there, so I can't qualify that. But I don't even like shortbread. But the word on the street is it's great.
There you go. We did get some donut money this week from our people who send us one-time support darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com. This one was from Kelsey Johnson. Thank you very much, Kelsey, for your contribution.
Super thank you, Kelsey.
Yes, we definitely needed that.
Mucho thanko.
And interestingly, Wild North Fermentation.
What the hell?
From wildnorthfermentation.com, they sent us some donut money and said, sorry about the Patreon membership. Oh, I know who this is. I thought it was an instant charge and I would still have access for a month. My bad. I did receive your message this morning. Love your podcast and all the work that you guys put into it. Jasmine. So we gave her a shout out last week.
Okay.
And then I noticed, her Patreon was canceled and I messaged her. I said, did we offend you? And some way I thought we'd offended her by our shout out.
Yeah.
The way we did her shout out.
This is the compassion part again.
Like, yeah. And she got back to me and said, no. I just made a boo-boo. And it was like, okay, good.
Oh, phew.
Fair enough.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I saw like instantly, wow, someone is a patron and then they're not after their shout out. And I thought,
Did we say something
and hurt somebody's feelings?
Is this the one where it happens?
It wasn't.
Phew.
There you go. And also from Amanda Beers.
Oh.
Thank you so much for all you do. The Yumberyard communities are amazing and I feel so lucky to be a part of them. Thank you, Amanda Beers.
No, we're the lucky ones to have you a part of them.
Yeah. Thanks for supporting us.
Very much so. Thank you, Amanda.
And thank you to all our patrons, past and present, for your pledges. We really appreciate your support of the show. It has helped us so much. We've been able to buy new equipment. We're going to be traveling to CrimeCon.
Yes.
Looking forward to that. We're even considering the CrimeCon in the UK, although it's one day.
Oh, but I would love it.
I have reservations about...
One-day expensive jaunt?
Yes.
But,
It would be fun. It would be fun. We'd have to make a thing of it, I think.
For sure.
Alan Warren wants to go as well.
Maybe like a live show coordination kind of a thing.
Yeah, there are some great podcasts there.
Yeah.
If you want to help support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/darkpoutine or, as I mentioned, for one-time support, send us donut money via PayPal at darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com. And if you don't already... please subscribe to the show. You can easily find us on iTunes, Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, or wherever you get your on-demand audio. Check out darkpoutine.com for show notes and other cool stuff. Give us a follow, like on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc., etc. Search for Dark Poutine to find us. Most importantly, tell your friends. Word of mouth is a powerful thing. Until next week, don't forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple.
Yeah, be a good puppy.
Be a good puppy.